This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
All right. Well, when financial advisors need help, that's why they come to Orlando in the BNY Mellon Pershing Insight Conference. We are live from the World Center Marriott in Orlando at the event. And I'm so delighted to have back with us is Stephanie Pierce, Chief Executive Officer of Dreyfus Mellon and ETFs at BNY Mellon Management, here on site and joining me and Matt on Business Week. It is so great to see you again.
Great to be back.
I want to talk about, because you guys have some news, but I promised I was going to start there. But actually, I want to say, what do you make of like the environment this year versus last year?
It's a very different environment.
It is, right?
I mean, I think this year we're looking at a situation where clients have been burned, right? Last year, nothing worked.
It's a hard
right?
year.
60 and 40, both sides of the trade didn't work. And even though markets are up this year, people are still reeling from what happened, what could I have done differently. It's actually interesting. It's the topic of one of the panels I'll be on later today, which is solutions for uncertain markets. And people are scratching their heads trying to figure out what to do.
Which is a perfect conversation. We're going to dig into that, Matt and I, with you in just a moment. Tell us about some of the news, though, that you guys, because you do use this platform to kind of talk about what you are doing to help financial advisors.
Well, we're very excited today because we have a big announcement. So BNY Mellon has just announced, as part of our Pershing X initiative, the Pershing X Wove platform. And as part of that, which literally just happened in the next room, as you know, as part of that, behind the curtain of Wove is BNY Mellon Precision Direct Indexing S&P 500, which is bringing the best of BNY Mellon's institutional indexing capability to financial advisors for the first time.
So unpack that. What does that mean?
So direct indexing is one of the fastest growing investment advisory products in the marketplace today, kind of north of 12% a year, maybe more than that. There's predictions of how big this will get over the next number of years, rivaling things like ETFs and other things. But essentially what those strategies are a customized index solution for investors that not only gives them kind of the tax, you know, the good tax treatment and all the great things that ETFs do, but it also gives them their own cost basis and the ability to customize for both tax kind of tax management, but also other preferences that they may have.
And they're so still, active or passive?
It's passive.
It is passive.
But what's interesting is, so you have all the kind of tax benefits that you would have in other tax-efficient vehicles and good kind of, you know, cost-effective investment management. But for an advisor, it allows them to sit on the same side of the table as their client and customize for them a solution that has kind of the tax benefits, but also the customization. So if a client says, gee, I want certain types of companies excluded, you can actually do that because they are the beneficial holder of the securities. It's a separately managed account.
Matt, come on in the conversation.
Well, it sounds like the perfect way to do your own. I hate to use the term ESG, right? Because people, it's been sort of politicized, but you can put your own money where your mouth is effectively, or you can do that in collaboration with your financial advisor and make investments that you feel comfortable with.
You can. I mean, I think at the end of the day, what advisors are trying to do for clients, again, is sit on the same side of the table with them and figure out what's important to the client. And we know taxes are important. We know costs are important. And we know that clients and the different segments that they serve have different preferences. Taxes are part of that, but not the only part. And so these strategies allow you a level of flexibility and customization. Essentially, think of it this way. In a year like last year, right, where the markets did not only nothing, they did nothing good, right? But at the end of the year, you could get this tax benefit of tax loss harvesting along the way. But then in a year like this year, where the NASDAQ is up, you know, double digits, right? And there may be some gains that are associated with that with some of your actively managed mutual funds. You can use those losses booked in your direct indexing account to offset gains in other parts of the portfolio. So where an advisor can really add value is to not only do asset allocation, but asset location with their clients, right? So these are less efficient strategies over here, and these are more tax efficient strategies. You put them together and you can wipe away a lot of the tax bill at the end of the year. So that's where these have become incredibly valuable tools for advisors to deliver value to clients.
So is this for you a better solution than having an in-house fund manager create an active ETF for you, or one that could be actively traded?
Well, two very different things, right? This is solving for something different. This is providing for our clients, if you will, beta exposure in core parts of the portfolio at a very cost-effective, you know, price. And then they can supplement that with active solutions. And in a way, they work perfectly together because some of the active solutions may deliver more capital gains over time. And then you can remove the tax bill impact of those by utilizing a direct indexing strategy to harvest losses along the way while still getting an index return.
Stephanie, could you build an ETF that has active ETFs inside it?
Could you build a direct indexing portfolio with active ETFs?
Yes.
Is that what you meant, Matt?
Yep. Yes.
You could, yes. So you can put any security inside these things. Of course, you know, we don't want to get too fancy and too complicated because then it becomes very difficult to explain. So we want to keep it simple for clients. But what we're really excited about is, you know, BNY Mellon has all these things under the roof of the firm, right? So Mellon, which is going to manage these portfolios, is in its 40th year of index management. We've been doing tax management for 30 out of those 40 years. And we've been doing it for some of the world's most sophisticated investors. So now we get to bring that to financial advisors and their clients at a very cost-effective means through the Wove platform, where it's all wrapped up in one bundle for the client. So we think that's really delivering unique value from our company. We call it One BNY Mellon. In terms of how we're delivering to clients. So Matt, you could do all those things, but again, we want to keep it simple and elegant for clients. The way I think about it is the active solutions and the passive solutions can work together in a portfolio to create both alpha at a cost-effective, in a cost-effective manner, but also a tax-efficient solution.
Stephanie, what's the constructive conversation around active right now, right? For so long, passive just worked so long that we all questioned whether or not active was even a strategy for the future. We know that that is certainly, we think about it differently now. So how do you guys think about it? Because I was listening to you with Paul Sweeney earlier, and I think you said
that's still the case because the Qs have outperformed every growth fund manager over the last 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years. And that's pretty passive.
That's a good point.
He does. So now what Carol was referring to earlier, we're still fundamentally big believers in active management. And in certain areas...
Half of your funds are active, right?
Yes. So for our ETFs, we have 17 ETFs. The two most recent ones are active. About half are active, half are passive. And the two most recent ones are a classic example of where active works really well, which is thematic investing. About of the $112 billion or so of thematic ETFs, about 77% of them are passive. So we think we're bringing something really different and unique. And Carol, as we were talking earlier, one of these is BKIV, which is BNY Mellon Innovators ETF. So think of it this way. If you look at the last 15 years of the S&P 500, about 52% of the securities that we know as S&P 500 stocks have actually disappeared from view. Not just from the benchmark, but have disappeared as companies. So what this product is trying to do, the Innovators Fund, is to think forward in terms of who are those companies that are disrupting the way we live, the way we work, the way we play, the way we do things.
Is this the Kathy, and I'm afraid to introduce this because Matt's going to go crazy on me, but is this kind of the Kathy Wood effect to some extent, right? Making us think about, okay, what are the companies, the futures, the trends, you know, for the future, the trends, the technologies?
Well, I'm not going to comment on anyone else out there, but I will say that this is an area that we've been focused on for many, many years. Never in an ETF before, so we're very excited to bring it. But this is an area where we want investors to have the ability to think forward and have access to companies that are going to disrupt the companies that are in these spaces today. And statistically, like I said, we know that if half of those companies disappear, that are the companies we know today, you want to be thinking forward and having a part of your portfolio invested in that.
So
Carol, the other
you,
one, just while I'm while I have
so
the mic
you,
here. Yep.
Well,
go ahead.
Just how do you hedge against, I mean, being early is the same as being wrong, right? So how do you hedge against that? You don't want your product to end up looking like Kathy Woods.
So, Matt, this is why we think about having a portfolio, right? We talked about direct indexing. We talked about thematic ETFs. You don't put all your eggs in one basket. You know, it's kind of like biotech investing, right? You want to do it in a portfolio construct because you don't know how it's all going to work. So the thematic ETF is a component of an overall portfolio, right? The other ETF that I wanted to just quickly mention that we also launched a couple weeks ago, which I have to say makes all 52,000 people at my company, particularly the women, incredibly proud to work here, is a BNY Mellon Women's Opportunities ETF. And the thesis here, of course, as we all know, is that companies that do the right things by women in terms of recruiting, retaining, promoting, and supporting them to be able to do it all actually perform better than companies who don't do those things. So here we actually have a component of philanthropy to the product where we're giving 10% of net profits to Girls Inc. To support the empowerment of girls starting at age 5 all the way up through high school and college. And the rates of graduation and empowerment of those girls is pretty powerful. So it's a good cause that we're contributing to, and we're really excited about it.
What have been the flows into these funds? I know they're new.
They're brand new. So too early to comment,
Carol. Okay.
We've just seeded them, but I will say the interest is really high. And back to Matt's point, I think you were talking earlier about market levels.
Yeah.
I think we're entering at a pretty good time, right? Markets have been sort of all over the place. So
why do you say that? What do you think? We only have got about 45 seconds left.
Look, I mean, I think, you know, people are really uncertain. I mentioned, you know, people are trying to figure out what to do. Their 60-40 portfolios didn't work last year.
Matt gave me a hard time when I said we're trying to see if we find are finding a bottom. He's like, look, the S&P's up 20% from that October low. And I'm like, well, do we buy it?
Well, look, I mean, here's what we know, right? We know, you know, interest rates, you know, short-term rates are at 5%. Cash is sexy, as we like to say.
I know.
Giving everything a run for its money, everything else a run for its money. That being said, as we know, if we think we're heading into a potential slowdown or even a shallow recession, as Vince Reinhardt, our economist, thinks,
yeah,
you know, we know that equities tend to lag, right, in terms of fixed income. Fixed income tends to do better kind of into recession. Equities tend to do better as you're coming out, as you bottom and come out. So that's where I think that from a valuation 30. Perspective, we're at an interesting place to enter with these ETFs right now, because valuations are pretty attractive.
But interesting good versus interesting bad. Good.
I agree with that.
So great to check in with you.
Likewise.
And see you again.
Thank you, guys.
Be well. Stephanie Pierce, Chief Executive Officer of Dreyfus Mellon and ETFs at BNY Mellon Investment Management, on site with us at the BNY Mellon Pershing Insight Conference. Lots more to come from me in Orlando, Matt back at our New York headquarters. Stick around, folks. You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week, and this is Bloomberg Radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
We are live from the World Center Marriott in Orlando at the BNY Mellon Pershing Insight Conference. I'm Carol Masser here in Orlando. Matt Miller back there at our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio in New York City. And our next guest, we're going to talk about a bunch of things, Matt, because we have M&A activity, because she was on a panel, a breakout, involving what was going on with M&A. And she also talked about talent and the war in talent. So delighted to have with us Lisa Crawford. She's Director and Head of Business Consulting at BNY Mellon Pershing. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
It's been a long Mellon Pershing. Welcome. How
Thanks,
are
girl.
You?
Great. Doing great.
So let's start. You did do two breakouts. What's really cool about this event is it's finance professionals who have so many questions about different things, and everything impacts them. And I always say that everything in our life has a business element to it, a market element to it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's public or private, it all comes together. So let's talk specifically, I think, about M&A first of all.
Let's go. Yeah.
M&A, I was looking at some Bloomberg numbers, down about 36% year over year in North America, and then it's down 41% globally. But we do see deals happening. Mm-hmm. How do you think about the M&A environment, and what did you want to convey to the groups here?
So in our little world of RIAs and advisory firms, we're certainly seeing a shift in the types of M&A deals that are happening. It's nothing particularly new, but bigger deals, a lot more strategic deals, a lot more minority investments. Gone are the days of the small elderly advisor selling because they have nothing else to do. Now it's really, I'm selling because this is the right strategic decision for my firm now before I get too far gone in my career, and I want to develop my people, I want to give my clients a great client experience. And so we're seeing some really creative deals across a couple of big firms that you would think would just continue to be independent, but they realize that there's great synergy to be together. It's making for a really fun conversation out in the marketplace.
Well, you're talking about in the advisory firm, right?
Yeah.
Among advisory firms. Does it get more complicated, in terms of, I don't know, some of the issues that are coming down? We talk a lot about AI, the role of technology, or does it make it easier to be a part of a group?
I think it makes it easier. Right? When we look at technology and the evolution of how technology is used, it used to be we bought technology to replace a person. Now we're hiring people to help enable that technology. And the technology has broadened. It's gotten more complicated, and we need more thoughtful technologists to mm-hmm. run those. You can't do that if you have 15 people. You need to be part of that 50, 100, 200 person organization. And so M&A is really creating opportunities for people to do that. And so when we see these mergers happen between two big firms, we're now seeing all these new and really cool career paths that are coming out of that, that are enabling a really cool client experience or some other new way that advisors can touch their clients and add value to their lives.
Matt, you want to come on in?
Yeah, so Lisa, are you saying that this market is, there's no longer a place for independent advisors and smaller firms?
Well, I didn't say there's no longer a place, but good try there. So no, I think there's always going to be a place for smaller independent firms. There's always going to be...
Because we have a guest coming up later that's going to talk a lot about the importance of being independent.
We have lots of great clients who are continuing to be independent, and that's great. There's a place for all of that. There are end clients that are always going to want that, I know this person because I went to school with them, or they have been on my street, or... You know, my family's used them for years. And then there are those that want the big brand and the flashy names and that. And that's okay. There's a market for everybody. And as our industry matures, we have to be able to provide a broader spectrum of services to a broader spectrum of clients. And this is allowing that to happen.
So, I am curious when it comes to client specific. Oh, go ahead, Matt. Go ahead. Come on, Matt.
I was just going to ask, you know, if you want to provide those services, a broader array of services, and serve a broader array of clients, how is it finding the talent to do that? I mean, is it difficult right now, or is that difficulty only reserved for, like, you know, giant hedge fund managers?
No, I'd say every firm that I've worked with in the last year has said, I'm hiring. And whether they're advertising for those hires or not,
Everybody.
They're all hiring. And we're no longer hiring for... senior people, they want junior power planners. They want the 3 to 5 year experienced advisors, and they want the back office and the operations people. Every firm I'm working with is hiring. And so what we saw kind of come out of the M&A space was that the talent market was so tight for so long that they started buying firms because they had talent. They started buying firms because they realized that they could lift out those people and expand the...
A great strategy, but kind of an expensive one, no?
Well, I mean, not really, though, because the cost of hiring someone and training them and bringing them on, at least then you're bringing on revenue, too.
Right, right. Is that continuing?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, because then how do you juxtapose this against, you know, we talk often about the labor market still is really tight. How do you kind of think about the more broader labor story versus what you guys are seeing in your industry?
Yeah. So for those of you who are here at Insight today, we have 65 students here. This is part of our student experience program that we've been doing since 2016. We're trying to bring more and more students to the conference so that advisors can meet them and hire them and bring them in. There are about 130 universities around the country that offer CFP designation programs. Mm-hmm. That number continues to grow. But those students are getting snapped up the day that they graduate. Many of them have jobs 6 months before they graduate. We need to get more kids into those programs. So that starts in elementary and middle and high school with
really?
Just basic financial literacy of advisors going to classrooms and teaching the difference between checking and savings and between credit cards and debit cards. We need more and more diverse talent in the space, and that's only going to come if we take the long strategy and get into the schools and get them here.
Well, Matt, you and I have had conversations, right, with guests about the importance of financial literacy and starting really, really early.
Yeah. I mean, if I were the boss, we would start that in elementary school, if not, you know, maybe middle school. I wonder, Lisa, when we see a bunch of pretty decently sized banks fail, or when we see, you know, a UBS take over a Credit Suisse and they've got to dispose of some assets, have you been able in the last few months to find some good deals out there? Have you been able to pick, you know, up talent or systems that are useful to you?
So at Pershing, we've been hiring a lot of people. Our business continues to evolve, and we are hiring from all kinds of places, in industry and out of industry. And the advisory firms that I work with, same thing. They're bringing people. We heard somebody this morning talk about how they hired somebody out of Microsoft to help them run their IT infrastructure
right.
in an advisory firm. Years ago, that never would have happened.
And you don't see any of that slowing down?
No, no. I mean, the consolidation just continues to gain momentum and create more new and different ways for us to do business and serve clients and create more value for them.
I am also curious that in terms of, I'm listening to you, it's funny, a second conversation here during our broadcast, and it sounds like a lot of optimism. I mean, based on what you're seeing, we, Matt and I, spend time with our TV colleagues and just with all of our guests, you know, kind of batting around, are we going to miss a recession? Are we going to see a soft recession? Based on what you're seeing and the demands of the clients that you all work with, and then just your fight for talent, what does it tell you about kind of the broader economic outlook?
Yeah, I'm definitely not the economist.
No,
in
I know,
the group,
I know. No, but these are like important factors.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, with these students that are coming out of programs, there's enough jobs for all of them. And even in a recession, that's a time where end investors, you and me, need mm-hmm. our advisors more than ever. So it's up to the advisors to be creative, to think about the profitability of their firm and how they're structured. That's a lot of the work that we do on the business consulting team here. But there's always going to be jobs. There's always going to be
growth. It's amazing, yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not a recession-proof thing. It
right.
just shifts and changes a little bit as the markets change. And there's constantly new opportunities being created.
Does AI just make this even crazier?
So we've got a couple of firms
just
that are starting
30 seconds.
AI. So yeah. actually, we were just talking about this with one of our firms last week at a different conference, and her next hire is somebody to do AI for the firm. Not because they know what they want to do,
right?
But they know they need to do something,
right? And they don't want to be left behind, right?
So
just to check it out.
Yeah.
What a pleasure.
Lovely to see
so
you.
So good and great to attack both of those worlds. They definitely like tie together. Lisa Crawford, she's director and head of business consulting at BNY Mellon Pershing, joining us here on site at BNY Mellon Pershing Insight Conference. You are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week. I'm Carol Masser here in Orlando. Of course, Matt Miller back there at Bloomberg headquarters in New York City.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
We are delighted to have with us Trey Prescott. He's Director of Business Development at the Atlanta-based Registered Investment Advisory Services Network, and he's joining us live from the World Center Marriott in Orlando at BNY Mellon Pershing Insight. Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and you're going to talk to us because it's interesting. We just had a conversation about, you know, investment advisors joining forces. Tell us about what you do, because you really help independents, right?
It's the opposite.
Or advisors
it's
go
the opposite.
Independent. I sit in a very fortunate seat. I get to work with advisors from wirehouse banks, broker dealers, and really telling them the best ways to go independent. And if I'm lucky enough, they'll come over to our firm and advisory services network. But we enable them to self-brand, and we take care of all the back office, and they can manage and prospect their book.
So they're kind of independent, right? They stay on their own, right?
They stay
but
on their own.
You're dealing with all their back office.
Yep. So they create the brand. They manage the money. It's their book of business. But they're just aligning that independence through our firm as a member of ASN, and we do all the billing, compliance, operations, all the day-to-day minutiae that they have no interest in doing.
Why do most come to you?
Most because they hate compliance, they hate operations, they hate billing, they don't want to deal with the SEC, and they want to do what they do best, and that's building their book or prospecting those new clients. And you know, unfortunately and fortunately, we're in a great space right now for the independent rep, but most out there, they don't know what's good for them, and they don't know or have a proper education as what's available to them. So a lot come to me, and they'll determine if a fee-based RIA is their best route or if one of the other firms out there, because that's one thing. It's exploding.
I want to bring my co-host Matt Miller in just a moment, but how big has the network gone? Because you said you've been doing this for 13 years?
This will be my 14th year this fall. I did 5 years on the operations team and sales on the other side. So we get to work with a number of different reps. And as of right now, advisory services networks, almost $7 billion in about 45 states. And those advisors roughly are a $10 million upstart. Our largest shop's about $450 million. So it's all across the board. And we service a lot of different entities.
Matt, come on in.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if your advisors are then more independent than they would be at, say, I don't know, like Ameriprise or Prue or any of the others like that. What makes them so independent? Do they not have any proprietary products to push?
They are on our ADV, but they are self-branding as a member of our firm.
What does ADV mean?
ADV is the brochure supplement, okay. Basically stating if they're on our RIA or if they're their own RIA. But generally, I mean, those reps coming over to us, they are looking for an independent space where they can manage the money. They can pick and choose the products. We don't push that type of stuff. We're an independent IA platform, meaning we're doing all the day-to-day minutia of the RIA. So we're not pushing product, we're not pushing brand, and we're not pushing a 5-year, 10-year lockup or upfront money. It's a straight independent service platform for those type of reps who want to create their own brand, sell for the highest multiple down the road, but also maintain that independence and open architecture for as long as possible.
All right, so
I don't know if Matt, you wanted to follow. Right,
so, Well, how many people are leaving bigger firms to come to you, and where are they coming from? Is there something specifically that they all share, that they all don't like about having to work for, you know, another boss?
That's a very long conversation right there. What I will say is that last year I spoke to 184 groups in total, meaning if you got 10 million in AUM or over, they were generally qualifying us as an independent RIA platform. This year alone, this morning actually, I spoke to my 155th group already, if that tells you anything about the space. A lot of those reps are coming from captive broker-dealer environments, banks, the wirehouse channels. Essentially, most of those groups are on 20 to 60% payouts, and they can never leave those companies anyway. So they come to us, peel as much out as possible, and they really control their own destiny from there because we don't require them to sell internally or externally. They can work with us for however long they want to and sell at their beck and call.
So I am curious about the financial advisors. Since you've been doing this for so long, what are you seeing about the individuals? What are some of the demographics? Are they getting younger? Are they getting older? Are they getting what?
It's amazing how many entrepreneurs there are in the industry. Most people that you think about in our industry are at a wirehouse in a, you know, with a bear and the bull on the front of it. A lot of people out there, they want to create their own practice and they want to create their own brand. And that's what we answer for. Demographics wise, look, I'm a family owned company. My dad started us 14 years ago as an offshoot from our consulting practice, Mainstay. It's getting generational. A lot of advisors are bringing in their sons or daughters to help answer for that next generation of clients, but that also makes it sticky. A lot of reps are liking that. You may argue with me on this, I see the industry getting a lot younger and a lot more hip as to the technology and tools that are available to them now. And going independent. 10 years ago, someone 30, 35 years old probably never thought about going independent. So we're trying to answer for that.
Now, diversity as well?
Diversity now, as well.
Go ahead, Matt.
Well, we were talking with Lisa Crawford just a moment ago from Pershing, and she said, you know, if you want to have a really broad, deep, and complex technology offering, then you've got to have, you know, more than 15 people in your firm. Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree. I mean, look, we're a different type of firm right here in that we are a full-scale RIA. But if you do want to be a single man or woman practice with $100 million under management, you can do it. It's hard.
Yeah.
It may not be the best use of your day, dollar, and overhead, but you can certainly do it right now. And as long as there's RIAs like us coming out there, more and more advisors are going to go independent.
You know, one of the other things that Lisa Crawford talked with Matt and me about, too, is, you know, the hunt for talent, the talent wars. What about the talent war for you all in terms of the back office operations, right, that you've got to support for all these registered investment advisors who want to go independent, but they need someone to take care of kind of that stuff?
Well, we're hiring right now. We're looking for 2 to 3 operations, 2 to 3 compliance people. It's a war out there right now.
Generally, are you having to pay up?
We're having to pay up right now, but we're seeing how many 15, 20, 30-year veterans are being let go of their current firms for the younger generation, but that's opening up seats for us to bring on those type of veterans to service those independent reps that we have, which, you know, we typically are. This will be the first year that we're doing an actual internship, but with that, we are looking for those veterans in our industry to help service our independent reps, because that's what they expect right now.
Yeah, interesting. Trey, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate it. Trey Prescott, Director of Business Development at Advisory Services Network, here on-site at BNY Mellon Pershing Insight Conference in Orlando.
When cybercriminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Matt, we recently talked with our Bloomberg Pursuits team, and it was about collectibles market and how it was cooling, kind of coming off the pandemic. And if you think about alt investments, it is things like cars and, you know, art, but it's also real estate, it's also private equity, it's hedge funds, it's a lot of different things, even cryptocurrencies. So we're going to talk a little bit about that right now, and really that importance of women being in that space. So we welcome Lisa Lewin. She's Vice President and Director for the Prime Services Division at BNY Mellon Pershing here in Orlando. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for having me.
It was a long introduction, so forgive me.
No problem.
But it is interesting because it's, you know, there's your kind of plain vanilla, right, market investing that we talk a lot about here at Bloomberg. Matt and I certainly do. But when you think about the alt space, and it is things like art and so on, but it's also real estate, it's private equity, it's a lot of stuff. First of all, can I start broadly?
Sure.
What you're thinking about that space right now?
So that's actually a great question. We had a panel this morning about why alternatives now. Like, why is it important for you to have some spectrum of an alternative investment in your asset allocation? And really, the key themes that came out of that panel, which are the same things that I agree with, are given all the market volatility that we've seen in the last, what has it been, year, 18 months,
right,
2 years, you know better than I have. It's so important that you have some type of strategy in your portfolio that's uncorrelated to the market, that helps you provide downside protection. And I really think alternatives can do that and do that for investors, whether it is private credit or art or real estate or hedge funds, which is what I'm focused on.
Okay, so before I bring Matt in, so which is the alt investment space? Because we spent some time at Milken also, again,
yes,
another year where it was all about the private markets and private credit in particular. In terms of when you look at this environment and if you're trying to hedge some of the volatility, where is it that you think investors, or where was the conclusion in that panel that people should be in the alt space? Where's the interest? Where's the opportunity?
Excellent question. You know, there was not a consensus in terms of where the opportunity was. I mean, they echoed the same things that you just
mentioned.
Anybody
say crypto?
No one said crypto, actually. Okay. But everyone, you know, there was definitely a lot of interest, which is what we've seen in terms of private credit, private debt. People believe there'll be opportunities there as well. But then there's also opportunities in the more liquid alternative strategies. So hedge funds maybe that are market neutral and allow investors to kind of hedge out some of that market risk. There's certainly, you know, interest in that as well. So I think it kind of is wide, you know, in terms of where the interest is. I think, you know, some of the things we touched on the panel this morning is it also depends on the individual investor and what their liquidity tolerance is and what their risk tolerance is. And that, you know, some of that is what's really driving the decision as opposed to the specific strategy.
All right, come on in, Matt.
So in terms of hedge fund performance, do you find it to be consistent? Because I feel like there are years when they're up big and there are years when they're down big. But, you know, the OG hedge fund, or at least the idea, the word, should mean that if the market is down a lot, you don't lose as much. And if it's up a lot, maybe you don't gain as much, but that's what you pay for.
So, Matt, excellent question. You know, what I always tell people when we're doing sessions, like at Insight or other conferences, when we're talking to investors about the importance of alternative strategies, it's really in these kind of markets where a hedge fund manager should really be proving their worth, right? That's where they demonstrate why you want to have them, you know, their strategy, their investment style in your portfolio, because that's really where they're going to differentiate themselves when you do have these market, you know, volatile markets. And I think that the good managers really perform, and that helps kind of weed those managers out from the not so good managers, right? So it's these types of environments where hedge fund managers can really prove their worth, so to speak, and really demonstrate why they add value.
So what do you think the strategies are? Well, what are the most popular strategies right now?
Oh, excellent question. That would actually be a good question for our kind of capital introductions teams who are more focused on that space. I think that they're, again, they're seeing kind of a wide interest from the investors that we work with, our investor relationships, again, depending on liquidity preferences, you know, the type of structure people are looking for. You know, it's really across the gamut. It goes back to some of those things Carol and I talked about before, whether it's private equity, private credit.
Right.
We see a lot of opportunity.
Is private credit still a great idea? You know, as we see, as we see credit really start to tighten up right now, as we expect more and more firms to go bust, is it really the best idea to go into that privately rather than play the public markets?
It's a really good question, Lisa, because I will say that for 2 years at Milken, it's been the golden era of credit, private credit. And when I start to hear that, it makes me a little nervous, having seen, just like Matt and you, you know, we've seen lots of market cycles. When everybody's like, yeah, all in, you get a little nervous. Especially when we're in a market where there's credit concerns.
Absolutely, and I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I have to be honest, I'm not the expert when it comes to private credit. Most of what we deal with within Prime Services is in the liquid markets, so I'm much more familiar with those strategies. You know, I think the people in our panel this morning, and I'm sure we can give you some points from some of that discussion, really, they had some good reasons why they thought private credit could still be positive in the next few years, having
right.
to do with the different credit cycle. You know, they said that.
And to be fair, everybody I talked to at Milken, you know, was still all in on private credit. So they
okay.
were definitely bullish. So you're on point.
Okay, good.
and folks can actually.
I'm faking it well then, Carol. Private credit is not my area of expertise.
It's another space, but it's been like so on everybody's radar. And we just had a great feature out from our Bloomberg News team. And everybody can also check out the different discussions on the Pershing website. I do want to ask you, though, because the panel was about women leading the way in the alt space.
Yes.
And Matt and I have lots of conversations of all types, whether it's with heads of companies, heads of organizations, certainly those in the investment space, about the importance of diversity
Absolutely.
When it comes to management of assets. So
yep.
what you're thinking about that right now? Because I feel like not a new argument. We know this, and yet we're still having it.
Well, as women, of course we know this, right?
It's still there.
No, it's still there. Look, this is something that personally that I'm very passionate about, this topic. Pershing Prime Services, Pershing, BNY Mellon as a whole, we're all very passionate about this topic because exactly as you said, we believe that having diversity is so beneficial for many reasons. I mean, one of the things we talked about on the panel was that by having like a woman-led manager or women in senior investment roles, you actually tend to have more diverse teams. So I think there's lots of different benefits to having diversity that people don't even think about, whether it's the diversity of thought, the diversity of opinion, the diversity of talent that you recruit if you're a woman. So I think there's a lot of benefits to investors, and the more kind of different opinions and different representation we get, the better we are as an industry.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, I think we've established for a long time that diversity is important. So we agree.
But it is, you know, I will say, I mean, right. I mean, one of the things I love working with someone like Matt is we have different thoughts on things. But I also agree, Lisa, like it's amazing in the investment space. I feel like I've been covering markets and things for a long time, that this is a conversation that we're still having. And I am curious, what's the narrative that you're having with investment advisors and clients of BNY Mellon Pershing, you know, about this? Is it moving along?
So it is moving along, Carol. Excellent question. And to give you some hope, some optimism, it's definitely moving along. Actually, in anticipation of this conference, we did a survey of a lot of our investor relationships just to get their thoughts on the topic and what they think about specifically women-led managers, women-led funds, senior women investment professionals. And the data that we got from the survey was really terrific. I mean, I have some of the notes in front of me, but they said 73% of survey respondents said that they have representation of women-led strategies in their portfolio. And 22% of survey respondents said that they have actually increased the percentage of women-led strategies that they have in their asset allocation over the last several years. You know, one of the things we continue to hear time and time again from investors is that there isn't demand to have more diversity. They want to see
there
more.
Is demand.
There is demand.
Is the pool not there for them to draw upon, or what?
Well, that's the biggest challenge, is there's not a huge universe of female-led talent. But that's improving, too. I mean, we started this conversation actually at our Insight conference last year.
Yeah.
And in that time, when we do the panel again a year from now, we've seen two very large hedge fund launches by female managers over $1 billion. We've seen women be put into key roles at some of the largest alternative asset management firms out there. You know, Man has a woman CEO. Bridgewater announced that they're going to have a female co-CIO. So I think that we, even though the pool might be small, it's growing and it continues to increase and be important to people.
Yeah, and I just think about the conversation Matt and I have with Lisa Crawford over at BNY Mellon Pershing about the importance of advisors going into schools and talking to kids at a young age. Yes, for financial literacy, which is something we've all been kind of pounding the table about, that should be part of education, but also, you know, it says to kids, here's what you can do.
Absolutely. And we talked about this on the panel last year, and we're going to talk about it tomorrow. But I think that's so important. And even for young people, as they're thinking about their careers, like the financial services industry offers such a variety of different career paths. And so no matter what you're interested in, you can probably find something that's appealing. So it's just exploring it.
All right. Fingers crossed. We're making progress. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
To check in with you. Lisa Lewin, Vice President and Director for Prime Services Division at BNY Mellon Pershing, on site at BNY Mellon Pershing Insight Conference.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.